with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's a minute past the hour. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday. On the Horn, I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. You can also find the Horn at places like TuneIn Radio and Dar.fm and Stitcher.com and Streama.com on Roku devices. Of course, Stitcher and TuneIn have apps for your smartphone, your iPhone, your Android device, what have you. The podcast is available under the subdomain for this program at whiterosesociety.org. And you can also get the podcast at iTunes. That covers the bases pretty well, doesn't it? Yeah. I got to tell you, this is getting back to the business of, or not the business of, but back to, and I am so tickled to have Dr. Bill back on the air with us. I can scarcely express it. But I am, I'm mind blown. I don't know if you just listened to that 2 hours of intensely not likely to be found very many other places, if anywhere, radio. But mercy sakes, we could do 3 hours tonight just talking about the ramifications of what Dr. Bill brought to light. I felt like my eyes were going to cross. When you come to the realization that the very idea for the Constitutional Convention was born because too many people were feeling all uppity like they were equal to the better folks. My goodness gracious. So you'll pardon me if really, honest and for true, my mind is a little bit blown by all of this. Because If that is in fact the case of how this country was born, and it is the case, then everything that has flowed from it is tainted by that attitude. And no wonder then that when I talk about democracy, I say that, and I heard some Congress critter, some senator, something, our democracy, horse feathers. Our democracy is something that we're only grasping toward, reaching toward, if at all. Meanwhile, we have an entire segment of the political structure in this country that wants to go in the opposite direction. It's all over me. A note in. Another individual writing, I too was left reeling listening to Dr. Bill. There are very few people who can do what Dr. Bill does. And you have to be in it for the whole thing. It's like what... When I was a kid. Oh, no, not another one of Bob's when I was a kid stories. My father would be sitting there watching some old black and white detective or mystery or whatever kind of movie. And he'd say, now, son, this is one of those where they're not going to tell you everything you're supposed to know right away. You got to hang on every minute of it or nothing's going to make sense at the end. Dr. Bill is a little bit that way. And I mean that as a compliment. Because there he was, opening the program, talking about this letter about the Annapolis Conference, or the Mount Vernon Conference, to the Comte de Vergen, in which the guy says, I'm going to have to write this in such a way as it'll be intelligible because they're deliberately muddying up the waters because they don't want the hoi polloi to understand that they're about to get the wood put to them. The people who need to understand, the right people, will understand. But the rank and file, well, they're not so much. And so we go through the whole, so Bill works the whole issue, and at the end, it's like ice water. He says, and you wonder why the credit card agreements look like they do. And if we actually had to read all the documents in a mortgage, it'd take 2 days to get through the process. And suddenly you understand that these things are organic in nature. That they don't just happen. The desire to make sure that the moneyed class keeps the blinders on the borrowing class, that's not something new. Neither is it something accidental. But rather, it is something entirely driven by the very essential nature of the way this country was designed. You want to know why Wall Street gets bailed out? Oh, for Christ's sakes, don't ask Jamie Dimon. Don't ask Lloyd Blankfein. Don't ask Larry Summers. You want to know why Wall Street's too big to fail? You go back and you ask Alexander Hamilton and James Madison. Because the answer is there. And it always has been. It always has been Colonel Mustard with the lead pipe in the billiard room. Man. So, as Dr. Bill noted, it'll be 3 to 5 this coming Monday, then Tuesday and Wednesday, 4 to 6. That's the way we're going to operate. This Monday only is that way, or the Mondays when he's got board meetings. But if you want to really understand all the way down to the ground why this country is how it is, why the problems we have keep cropping up, then I had a note from Ben Birch saying he's going to get the archiving set up for Dr. Bill. You'll be able to get the feed for Dr. Bill just like you do for this program. Add it to your list. Because there is nobody out there making this history, these facts, as accessible as Dr. Bill O'Brien is. Dr. Bill's not out there hoping to become some great shining star of the radio industry and I don't know, be the warm-up guy for Howard Stern. Dr. Bill, whom I have known for 10 years now, is absolutely on fire with the idea that we have got to understand where we came from in order to have even the first foggy clue about where we're going. So for those of you who asked for invitations into the Horn Dropbox, I got a bunch of them. I'm working through them. It's going to happen. But if you do, I always put Dr. Bill's file in the Horn Dropbox, and you can always get it there. But it will also be set up as a podcast feed from White Rose Society. I implore you to take time for this. If you listen to Dr. and then you turn around and you go do the reading, there is not going to be a right-winger in this country who's going to have a prayer trying to haul out the tired malarkey that they promulgate as history. I've got another, I've got a classic case in point. Whenever I see this clown's name, I think of Dr. Bill. This guy has been completely discredited. He's a liar. But he goes on lying. And he makes stuff up. I'm talking, of course, about David Barton of Wall Builders fame, who is famous for just making stuff up. I mean, the whole cloth treatment. This is an excerpt of David Barton. And no, this is not, Prayer Meeting Wednesday reboot. This is an example of how certain unethical, immoral, unprincipled people try to shoehorn or backdoor or slither theocracy into our body politic. And we've always had some of them, but mercy. These are remarks he made at Fellowship Reformed Church in Hudsonville, Michigan this past weekend. If you care about American history, if you care about our culture, if you care about the idea of popular governance, this is one of those strap into the chairs and stick the tennis ball in your mouth moments, because you're gonna scream. This is David Barton with the best argument I know of for why we need the work that Dr. Bill O'Brien is doing.
And if you know the Bible, and if you know and read the Constitution, you will see Bible verses and Bible phrases all over the Constitution. It quotes Bible phrases everywhere. People, they say, oh, it's a godless Constitution, it's a secular document. When somebody tells me the Constitution is a secular document, I know that they're biblically illiterate. They don't recognize a Bible verse when they see it, because the Constitution is loaded up with direct quotations out of the Bible.
You got that? You know, it says right there in Genesis, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union. No, it doesn't. Although, I guess you could make a creditable argument that somewhere out there in the Bible is something roughly equivalent to the framers having come up with the notion that people with darker skin than theirs were somehow three-fifths of a human being. Imagine the millions in this country, the tens of millions, the hundreds of millions in this country who, for reasons that were discussed by Dr. Bill and our own Texas Betsy on the program just an hour ago, are utterly unequipped to do anything but nod their heads when someone tells them that the Constitution is made up of Bible verses. Please. But once you get past please, then you go, oh my God, he's right. What do people have with which to counter the idea that this is a biblical-based country, founded on biblical principles, when in point of fact, the people who pulled this government together for whatever motives they were, under whatever motives they were operating, mostly were people who had largely given up on the idea of a great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky running around smiting people. Sure, they talked about providence. That's the same way we talk about luck. Good luck. God be with ye. Goodbye. And we've got an entire country that has been deliberately put in a position where they are utterly unable to dispute a prince of lies like David Barton. David Barton and the rest of the fundies are still all burned up about God being kicked out of the schools. Well, if what I heard in the last hour is true, it's not so much God that get kicked out of the schools as any real desire to educate all the children in it, in them. Back to the Lion King.
So we have all this history of founding fathers and court cases saying the Bible. Where did it change? It changed in 1963 with two court decisions, a joint decision. This decision, Abbott and Shemp, Murray Collette, June the 17th of 1963, the Supreme Court said no more Bible in schools. Now, why would they do that? We have 320 years, literally, of the Bible in schools. The Supreme Court itself said this is without any historical precedent. There is no historical precedent in our history for not having the Bible in schools, but it's time to take it out. Why would they take it out? Well, the court explained why they would take it. As a matter of fact, they called on the testimony of a psychologist. They didn't have any historical precedent. They had no legal precedent, but Dr. Solomon Grayzel told them what was going to happen if kids read the Bible in schools, and they said, that's what we thought. And so here's the quote the Supreme Court pointed out in its decision on why we took the Bible out of schools. They said, if portions of the New Testament were read without explanation, they could be and had been psychologically harmful to the child. We've now discovered the Bible causes brain damage. We can't let you kids suffer brain damage. We've got to stop the brain damage. That's the reason given by the Supreme Court on why the Bible went out of schools, was psychological harm to children. So we have...
Now, unintentionally, such as kind of was the case earlier with a certain clip from the widow's peaked monstrosity, Paul Ryan, Barton accidentally tells the truth. Because the fact of the matter is, the Bible does bring about brain damage. If you go through life thinking that at some point in time on this planet, probably less than 6,000 years ago, human beings were engaged in conversation with chatty water moccasins, there is probably something significantly wrong with your brain. If you believe in a literal interpretation of the Bible, and you believe that the sun revolves around the earth as the Bible says it does, and you believe that contrary to all the known science that we have available to us, there is probably something significantly wrong with your brain. The Bible does create brain damage. Naturally, of course, David Barton was being a smartass and tucked away in all that palaver is the fact that he was lying wholesale in the first place. Because psychological damage, go read the case. psychological damage was not the basis for eliminating mandatory Bible reading. What you really find out from David Barton in this moment, this thorn in the side moment, is that he is at the very least ambivalent toward people of other faiths, and at most openly anti-Semitic. Because in point of fact, if you go and read the case, and if you do read what it does contain about Dr. Graysell, what he said is that to compel children to participate in Bible readings in public school is psychologically harmful to little Jewish children. Because the fact of the matter is that the perspective is everything. I mean, even if you're reading from their book, their half of the book, the much larger half of the book, the Old Testament, even if you're reading from the part that constitutes the Torah, if you're doing it from a Christian perspective in which all of that is just the setup act for the wondrous appearance of Jesus, then it ain't the same thing. So what David Barton isn't saying but is saying is to hell with the little Jewish children, to hell with the little Muslim children, to hell with the Baha'i children, to hell with the Jain, Hindu, Buddhist, atheist, animist, to hell with them all. We want to ram Christianity down their little throats. And that's because David Barton is a liar. David Barton is a theocracist. He's probably a Christian Reconstructionist if you get really right down there on the ground and waller around with him for a little bit. The people who want to bring back stoning as a form of punishment in this country. And the best way to be prepared to deal with that kind of crap is to learn the real history. Learn the real history. Best way to do that is to be tuned in from 4 to 6, or in the case of this Monday, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Horn. Or to get it in podcast form or from the Dropbox. The very best way. Note in from Dr. John. By the way, thanks everybody who helped out in meeting Dr. John's fundraising challenge last night. I can't tell you how important that is in us being able to have another month of broadcasting. Dr. John says, Howard Stern only wishes he could have as good a warm-up man as Dr. Bill in the Virtual Center for the Study of the American Constitution. Hear, hear. If you want access to the Horn Dropbox, where I'm putting show files and where I'm putting Dr. Bill's files, all you have to do is send me an email, and I will invite that email address to participate in that Dropbox file. Okie doke. It's that easy. So I didn't necessarily mean to start the program by going into a long digression on the importance of what Dr. Bill is trying to accomplish, but it is incredibly important. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn, and that's pretty thorny there, what you heard from David Barton, isn't it? But there is ever so much more. I kind of wanted to save this for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Being as how there was a great deal of right-wing palaver about the Second Amendment and all that freedom protecting. Over in the Senate, if you like, if you treat the ignorance of the right wing as being of somewhat an entertaining value, then giving a listen to the modern day, and I mean this in more than simply content, I mean it in, the guy looks like Joe McCarthy, for God's sakes. No, the modern day Joe McCarthy. Willard Romney had binders full of women. Joe McCarthy has a file folder full of commies. From, you know, Harvard stuff. Fluoride mandrake. In little children's ice cream. Communist aggression. Communist infiltration. Right. So, a gun violence bill passed the Senate Judiciary Committee today. And the right wing were squealing like the stuck pigs they are. Because they could just see their freedom! Wolverines! Going away. And Ted Cruz has been told for long enough that he's a really, really smart feller that he's begun to believe his own press. Brand new to the Senate, he's out there being paid much attention to because he's a conservative thinker, you know, like Paul Ryan's. He's an intellectual. So he's a conservative intellectual. Never mind the two terms are mutually exclusive. You cannot eat boogers and be an intellectual at the same time. And Ted Cruz is as sure as God made a little green apple, a booger eater. Crispy. Well, there went everybody's dinner. Sorry. So in this Senate hearing, Ted Cruz decides he's going to get all smart because he's a conservative intellectual, like we talked about. And he says, and he's talking to Senator Dianne Feinstein, of whose fan club I am not a member, but still, just the same. I pose to the senator from California, would she deem it consistent with the Bill of Rights for Congress to engage same endeavor that we are contemplating doing with the Second Amendment in the context of the First or Fourth Amendment? Namely, would she consider it constitutional for Congress to specify that the First Amendment shall apply only to the following books and shall not apply to the books that Congress has deemed outside the protection of the Bill of Rights? All this having to do with certain forms and types of firearms that are designed only to tear human bodies into teeny tiny pieces. Oh, doesn't he just sound so smart? He does. He sounds like a conservative intellectual, doesn't he? Now, if, however, you were tuned in to Dr. Bill during the last couple of hours, you would have heard him mention in his conversation with Texas Betsy that lo and behold, no sooner had the young nation gotten its constitution under it than the Senate of the United States started passing laws to ban and or tax out of existence the importation of foreign books, because the Senate of the United States, in its infinite wisdom, did in fact deem that reading that foreign stuff might not be good for the proles. You don't want the, they were following the third commandment of W.C. Fields. Don't smarten up the chumps. Well, luckily, Chuck Schumer was there to peel Senator McCarthy, Cruz's argument like a grape. He said, in reference to the question my colleague from Texas asked, would you limit books? Would you name specific books? Yeah, it's constitutional within the ambit of the First Amendment to eliminate child pornography. Oh! Zing! See what he did there? He equated Ted Cruz's pet firearms with kiddie porn. Nice touch. And we have lots of laws that are very explicit about that, very explicit, that are constitutional, that have been upheld as constitutional. Similarly, you can't falsely scream fire in a crowded theater. Similarly, we have libel laws. Every one of these is an impingement on the sacred First Amendment, upheld as constitutional. There are reasonable limits on each amendment, and I think it is anomalous, to put it kindly, for either side to interpret one amendment so expansively and another amendment so narrowly that it just doesn't add up, because your interpretation of the Constitution should be consistent. And in the main, Senator Schumer was talking largely about elements of the First Amendment, but there was really no reason to go on to the Fourth, because the Fourth is merely a paper-thin, tissue-like shell of what the framers intended it to be. It has been eroded over the years by court decisions and by the Congress itself, so that the very plain language of the Fourth Amendment, which really doesn't call for much interpretation, has been interpreted just about right out of existence. One of my favorite cases is U.S. v. Leon. Go have a read. The good faith exception to the Fourth Amendment. Good faith exception. Who knew? Guns. How many millions out of work? How many millions without health care? And Ted Cruz is concerned about our guns. But I bring that up as prologue on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Let's just do a quick survey here. A woman was transported to the hospital with a leg injury after her husband accidentally shot her with his 9mm handgun at 11:34 p.m. March 9th at their home on St. Thomas Drive in Westerville, Ohio. The man was apparently showing his handgun to a visiting family member. Look here, granted, I haven't seen my penis in about 15, 20 years, but I got me a gun! Showing his handgun, probably would have been better off flashing the, never mind. Man was showing his handgun to a visiting family member who was considering purchasing a handgun for himself. Freedom! Man told police he unloaded the gun while showing it to the family member, but accidentally reloaded the gun before disassembling it. What? He pulled the trigger and the gun went off. I forgot I'd done put my Barney 5 bullet back in. No charges were filed. From Ohio, moving slightly westward to Talibandiana, Dateline Kokomo. No, I'm not going to play it, I promise. Police said a Kokomo man accidentally shot himself in the genitals. Okay, I go back. No, okay, so don't. No. A man accidentally shot himself in the genitals as he robbed a convenience store early Tuesday. Sorry, that just. Yeah. Let's see if I can do that. Police say a Kokomo man accidentally shot himself in the genitals as he robbed a convenience store early Tuesday.
You dick!
Yeah. Kokomo police said they were called to a village pantry store at one yada 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 after a clerk at the store called them. The female clerk told police that a man came into the store with a semi-automatic handgun, grabbed her hair, and demanded cash and cigarettes before handing her a white cloth bag. The clerk said as she retrieved the cigarettes, she heard a gunshot and turned to confront the man, who yelled that he had shot himself. The bullet traveled through his right testicle and into the bottom part of his leg, Kokomo Police Lieutenant Don Whitehead said. They identified the man as 25-year-old Derek Kosh. He grabbed a bag full of cash and fled the store. Well, he'll need it for the emergency room. It ain't cheap. He shot himself as he was sticking the firearm into the waistband of his pants. Westward again. Westward ho. 29-year-old rural Clifton, Illinois man shot himself in the lower leg while shooting targets at his residence Monday afternoon. Iroquois County Sheriff's Police were called to Presence St. Mary's Hospital in Kankakee around 3:30 p.m. for a man with a gunshot wound. The man told police he'd been shooting at targets and at some point accidentally shot himself in his lower left leg. It's that at some point that always knocks me down. At some point. They put it down to go get a bologna sandwich. He was adjusting his shooting goggles. At some point, he shot himself in the leg. Way west. Washington State. Washington State Patrol says 46-year-old trooper was accidentally shot in the leg Wednesday afternoon during a training exercise at the patrol's academy in Shelton, Washington. Kitsap Sun reporting that Sergeant Freddie Williams says the trooper suffered an entry wound to the thigh. He's stable. This is a professional gun handler, mind you. And now south and east. It's Behar County, Texas, isn't it? We pronounce the X as an H. Behar County, Texas detention officer was taken to the hospital Tuesday after he was injured when his gun accidentally discharged. Now, all of this is within a week. After he was injured when his gun accidentally discharged inside the facility's locker room. It's just after 3 p.m. when the officer, who has been with the department for 5 years, was reholstering his gun, and it somehow discharged. Bear County. See? Screwed it up anyway. Knew better than to pronounce the X. Bear County. All right. Thank you, Texas Betsy. Texas Betsy is the Horns grammarian? Yes. In addition to being the Horns' Jewish mother, she's also the Horns' grammarian. Bear County. Thank you. Spokesman said it wasn't clear yet if the officer was hit with a bullet, a fragment of a bullet, or a ricochet of some sort. Accidentally discharged. Yeah, and a lot of these, and private citizens like them, and cops like them too, the Glock, which has deliberately no safety. It's kind of got a dual little internal trigger inside the trigger itself, and if you squeeze them both at the same time, gun go bang. Bullet come out fast. Maybe into your testicle or your leg. Right. Yeah. Onward. We're just crisscrossing the country. Clark, Montana, where a teen was accidentally shot and seriously injured while he and a friend were cleaning handguns. 19-year-old Patrick Keynes was shot in the lower abdomen. Keynes' friend had been dry-firing the weapons after reassembling them and hadn't realized one .41 caliber revolver was still loaded. Tennessee. Monroe County, Tennessee man shot in the neck by his teenage son during an argument over the weekend. He said the shooting was unintentional. Carl William Fuller is 42 years old of Madisonville, Tennessee. He's flown by LifeStar helicopter to the University of Tennessee Medical Center following the incident. Detective Captain Jeremy Harrell said he was lucky. Edward Carl Fuller is the 14-year-old son of Carl William Fuller. And they were in a verbal argument when the teen grabbed a 9mm handgun inside the home and a struggle ensued. Freedom! Wolverines! Gun discharged, father was shot once in the neck. Son ran from the home but was taken into custody after a brief foot chase with police. And south to Franklin County, Georgia. Investigators continue to look into the case of a man who brought a gun to Tate's Creek Baptist Church, and it went off accidentally. No charges have been filed. Police are still talking to the man. He was carrying his pistol in his right front pocket during church service. Franklin County Sheriff Stevie Thomas says it was toward the end of the service, and they were standing for the benediction. Had his hand in his pocket, and the gun went off and struck him in the right knee. It is illegal to carry a gun into a church building in Georgia, but the NRA is working on that. Sheriff Stevie Thomas said, that's one of the places where you are not supposed to bring a firearm into a house of worship. I'm waiting to hear from the district attorney, and we'll go from there. The sheriff also said it was could have been a lot worse situation, and he's not real clear on the man why the man had a gun in church in the first place. This in from KTNV Las Vegas. Police say a man accidentally shot himself near Bishop Gorman High School on Monday afternoon. Gunshot wound to the lower half of the body. Don't really know why. Back to Talibandiana, Marion, Talibandiana. Man treated at Marion General Hospital this past Saturday after he accidentally shot himself in the hand while attempting to break apart his handgun. But you know, if you want to be part of the gun culture, even the NRA will tell you that you should have some level of training on how to use your firearm. And that's why 61-year-old Caroline Roberts of West Liberty signed up for a concealed carry class through Skill Training LLC. Mrs. Roberts said she asked her instructor, Benita Frame, a question while her gun was in the holster. Then Mrs. Roberts and Mrs. Frame reportedly reached for the holstered gun, and it fired, injuring Mrs. Roberts' leg. Alabama teen accidentally shoots himself with shotgun while cleaning out closet. 16-year-old boy was accidentally shot in the foot with a shotgun when he tried to pull the gun out of a closet, according to police. Because, you know, that's what I do. I take the family shotgun, and I make sure it's all loaded up real good and stick it back in the corner where it can get hung up around, you know, some old fallen down coat hanger or something like that. Right. Teen was cleaning out a closet in the 1700 block of Queen City Avenue, Tuscaloosa, around 12:20 a.m. Saturday. That would be 20 minutes past midnight on Saturday. He's cleaning out the closet in Tuscaloosa. When he knocked the shotgun over, gun discharge struck him in the foot when he tried to pull it out of the closet. It goes on like this. On and on and on. And then there's the story of... There's a reason I stay out of Walmart, let's put it that way. A woman in Walmart, no really, a woman in Walmart got all bent out of shape. This was in Florida, I do believe. Got all bent out of shape when a Walmart clerk would not accept her $1 coupon. Really? A $1 coupon. She became agitated. And when asked to leave the store, said, "Don't y'all follow me!"
Don't y'all follow me or I'll give you something to follow me over. She fled the scene, this lawful gun owner. See, that's the trouble with gun owners. They're all lawful gun owners until they're not. She fled the scene. And was leaving when she was pulled over by the local constabulary. We're talking, of course, about 61-year-old Mary Frances Alday of Crawfordville, Florida, up in the panhandle, often known as Lower Alabama, or simply L.A. She had a $1 coupon that the Walmart coupon authoritarian fascist freedom hating wouldn't take. This is from The Smoking Gun. As several Walmart employees watched from the store's entrance, Alday appeared outside her car waving the gun in the holster. Remember, this is over a $1 coupon. Alday then removed the weapon, a loaded Smith & Wesson 38 Special, from the holster and pointed it at all the store employees and stated, "I have something for y'all." Walmart workers then retreated back inside the building due to being in fear of their lives. Alday, who fled the Walmart parking lot in the 2011 Ford Escape. Oh, thank you, goddess of irony. Was subsequently pulled over by a sheriff's deputy who asked if there was a firearm in the SUV. She said, "Yes, I have a concealed weapons permit, and you are not taking my gun." Asked about the gun's location, Alday replied, "You are not taking my gun." The deputy asked her twice to exit the vehicle. "Ma'am, step out of the car, please." "Ma'am, step out of the car, please." Then she reached over the console for something sitting in the passenger seat, and he dragged her out of the car and handcuffed her. That's after he tasered her. The firearm was found in the vehicle's center console. She's been charged with 4 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and 1 count of battery. Lucky for her, it's Florida. And being Florida, she may have available to her no really she may have available to her the Stand Your Ground law. Isn't that just beautiful? Standing her ground over a $1 Walmart coupon. I need you to know something. And it's this. Every one of these stories is a real live story of freedom protecting lawful gun owners. I prefer to spell lawful gun owner as parentheses, capital L, close parentheses, and then the word awful, and then gun owners. Of those who were shot, they have my sympathy, and I'm sure they have yours. But can we, after we step back from the natural human sympathy we feel. Can we wonder for a moment about the degree of fear and paranoia that attends every one of these lawful gun owners? Now, there you are in Georgia. And look, I've got a teenage son. I know raising teenagers in any age is never easy. I think it probably was a little bit simpler when you had the law on your side and you could say, and the law said, if he gets too rowdy, just bring him to the gates of the city and we'll stone him to death for you. And maybe that served as a deterrent. But most people love their children enough that they don't want to do that anyway, even if the Christian Reconstructionists do. But there he was in his home in Georgia. Had a 9mm pistol for home defense. And Lord knows what he was getting into at the 41-year-old or 42-year-old with the 14-year-old. But the 14-year-old had learned enough that the answer to problems is to reach for the gun. Now, here's the bonus question. You reckon they'll get rid of that gun? Or will they, seeing as how he said it was an accident and everything, will they just say that these things happen? Because you never know when the marauding gangs that Wayne LaPierre been done talking about is going to just come, happen to, it could happen. Or maybe the blue-helmeted UN forces in their black helicopters. Marty writing in, sympathy? Okay, but not for the guy who shot off his own equipment. A different type of moron there. Yeah. But being liberals, being progressives, we can even inquire into the chain of events that puts someone in a position where they wind up sticking up a convenience store. Because we're progressives, we're liberal people. We can do that kind of thinking. And we can also wonder, 12:20 a.m., kid shot by a shotgun that was loaded in a closet. The South and their closets. Montana and a gun cleaning party. Florida. And a coupon. But thank God for Senator Ted Cruz, right? Out there standing up boldly for the freedom of Americans oppressed by big government to shoot their own selves in the foot or shoot themselves in the leg at church or shoot they. Yeah, well, okay. Booger eaters. Pity's sakes. So that's just a starting place for this thorn in the side Thursday. I was put in mind of all of this by the essay that Michael Moore put out suggesting that at some point in time the NRA would just be done forever if we ever actually see photographs from Newtown. Now, nobody wants to see photographs from Newtown. But Michael Moore made a valid point. It was, in fact, the brutality that was inflicted upon Emmett Till. And I think I'd even mentioned something like this previous on the air. Hi, Michael. that sometimes America has to be confronted with the consequences of its evil ways. And Emmett Till's mother made America confront itself. And he also points out in his essay that our visceral distaste for the Vietnam War came out of the television footage that we saw of that bloody monstrosity, and especially the My Lai photographs. The Civil War came home for a lot of people who weren't having it fought around them when Matthew Brady's photos of the Antietam battlefield were published in New York City. And Michael Moore may be right. Those images, if ever they come out from Newtown, might just finally paid to the National Rifle Association. I'm seeing some buffering going on here. I'll probably be getting emails shortly. I don't know what's going on. And Texas Betsy, you may be right. She said today Emmett Till's lyric could open an open casket funeral, and not a single network would broadcast the deceased. True. All right, Michael, if you never trust me on another bumper, trust me on this one. Okay. This is the Horn. This is Conversatio, listener-supported. Here endeth the Thorn in the Side Thursday filibobster. If you want to help us out, we are in a hole. We're trying to raise $150 a night, and I kind of lost track of how deep that hole is, but it's a hole. So your PayPal button, headonradionetwork.com, is where you can find it. There, too, you will find the snail mail address. Bills are waiting to be paid. And we'll come back, hopefully, with your phone calls. You know the number, 304-658-3333. On Skype, you can always reach the program via my handle there, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Email, of course, comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. Take a break and come back. Oh, it's Thursday. Green News Report? I'll have to check and see. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
What kind of problems are we talking about?
The children have very unique problems. There's blindness, lameness, pyromania, learning disabilities. One of them was even
shot in the dick, shot in the arm, shot in the head, shot in the leg, shot in the lung. Now I got shot one time in the dark, one time in the day. Shit, I've been shot so many ways, I can't remember. Last way I got shot, I got 16 scars for my 16 bars. My exit wounds make record exec goons. I've been shot so many times, doubles had to make room. I've been shot.
I've been raised about the dust like a bloodlust phoenix. It seems the more bullets that I catch, I get the greenest green of all the greenest green pastures in the world. Got a bullet hole in my penis. Don't believe it? Ask my girl. If I hadn't been shot, I would've never got laid. Would've never got signed. Would've never got paid. I would've never known how lonely it's at the top. Would've never been shit if I'd never been shot. I've been shot. I've been shot. I used to think I'd make it on talent and nothing else. But these days, a little bit of violence helps. And I could tell that it's the gunplay that drives the crowd crazy. Every now and then, somebody to graze me. Just shoot me a little bit, man. Make it look good. Well, not every rapper does it, but every rapper should. It's a good career move. Just wait, you'll see. When everybody goes and gets shot like me.
Yo, so that's what I'm saying. Sometimes you gotta get shot in order to make things happen. Sometimes, you know, so just, you know, get a friend and a gun and have them point the gun at you and you pull the trigger and bang, 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 bang.
Oh, oh, oh,
it's as easy as 3, 2, 1.
Bang. Oh, oh, oh,
all the best rappers get shot by guns. I've been shot. I should be dead, man. I should be dead. Did you hear what I said? I should be dead. With 14 slugs in my body and 2 in my head. And I should be dead, but I'm rich instead. 22 caliber salary. A house in the hills and a house in the valley. Get a good mansion, pally. Behind the trigger when your sale figure's dead. Shot the dick, shot in the arm, shot in the head, shot in the leg, shot in the lung. I've been shot.
It's Thursday, March 14, 2013.
Department of Interior expands solar again. Department of Energy expands nuclear again. Just what's in that Pope smoke? Plus,
now we can't afford for this world to get hotter. And we can't afford polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons in our water.
John Lennon has a message for New York's governor.
All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
An asteroid could destroy the Earth. Global warming solved.
Well, that's one way to look at it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it was in the 90s out here in Los Angeles yesterday, smashing heat records. And I got to say, it was great. I wish every day could be like this.
Well, at the rate things are going, it just might get you ish.
Yeah, sooner than I hope, I guess.
Probably.
What do you have for us today?
Well, we have a pope. What does this have to do with green news?
What does this have to do with the green news?
Well, I'm glad you asked. The Vatican on Wednesday divulged their secret recipe for smoke. The black smoke, it turns out, is mostly from coal. It's derived from coal tar and sulfur, whereas the white smoke is from pine resin. That both creates a steady stream of smoke on top of the natural smoke from the burned ballot papers.
And thus, the partillion city spiked over the patio.
Yes, it did. The Vatican spokeshead, quote, despite the great plumes of smoke that poured out of the chimney, neither the Sistine frescoes nor the cardinals in the chapel suffered any smoke damage.
Well, that's good.
While the big corporate media was heavily focused on the Vatican, believe it or not, other things were going on in the world. Outgoing U.S. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar and California Governor Jerry Brown announced three massive new wind and solar projects to be built on public land in Nevada and California, part of a program that pre-selects specific sites for fast-tracking utility-scale renewable energy generation.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, the three projects would generate 1,100 megawatts. That's enough to power about 350,000 homes. That brings to a total 37 big renewable energy projects now so far on public lands since 2009. That's enough to power about 4 million homes. And for those who are counting, when it comes to public lands, the oil and gas industry has leased 4 to 5 times the average of public lands that is signed for renewable energy projects.
So they're using those public lands to mine, to drill, to frack, as opposed to use them for renewable projects like solar.
That's right. And solar energy overall in the United States grew 76% in 2012 alone. That jump was led by utility-scale projects like the ones on public lands, but also includes small-scale arrays and residential rooftops. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Energy announced a wave of new federal funding to help the nuclear industry design and license modular reactors and create a new factory network to build them. Modular reactors are literally small modules built in a factory that can then be shipped by or rail and assembled on site. Theoretically, they could be constructed in a third of the time and at a third of the cost of massive conventional nuclear reactors.
So this is a whole bunch of little nuclear reactors that are going to be spread all over the place?
Yeah, the Department of Energy wants to replace dozens of coal-fired power plants that are expected to be retired in coming decades.
Is it just me, or does that sound like a terrible idea?
Well, it depends on if you like nuclear.
And I don't.
And we should note that federal support for nuclear dwarfs any support for other renewable technologies like solar and wind.
Do these smaller reactors have smaller explosions when they fail?
I don't know yet, but they still generate waste, and there is still no plan to deal with that.
Oy.
As the budget and debt standoff continues in the nation's capital right now, the oil industry and their front groups are already running ads against any attempts to eliminate their billion-dollar taxpayer subsidies as a way to reduce the deficit.
Of course they
are. Or any attempts to make them pay for the cost of their pollution through a carbon tax.
Of course they are.
Even though the Obama administration has repeatedly insisted that no carbon tax is on the table. Finally, speaking of fracking...
Don't frack my mother, 'cause I ain't got no other.
Sean Lennon, son of John Lennon of the Beatles and Yoko Ono, and a musician in his own right, has launched his own campaign to convince New York Governor Mario Cuomo to reject fracking in New York State. He made a cheeky video with his mom called Don't Frack My Mother. We've got the whole thing posted at our website. Check it out at greennews.bradblog.com.
If you dare. For more on that and the other stories we couldn't get to, as does, check our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, download us anytime via iTunes. Listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher or the TuneIn Radio apps. Find us and like on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
This has been your Green News Report.
You can do anything that you want to do. Frack my mother.
Don't frack my mother.
Stand by. Online with tech support right now. We can't even get stream out. deeply frustrating this is. This is also the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. That interlude of the past, 20 minutes or so, that interlude of silence, has been a result of me being on the phone with tech support, who were, characteristically, anybody want to pick out the phrase, useless as a screen door on a submarine, pointless as tits on a bull, kickstand on a tank, all of that. Yeah, this thing will settle down in a minute as soon as the, as soon as the volume compresses. There it is, it's kicked in now. Happy, happy. Anyway, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and the one that's in mine is about, it feels more like a Roman gladius or something. Jesus, this is... But who cares, right? We professionals are supposed to be able to deal with this. So where shall we go? First of all, the lines are open. If nothing else, we will have ourselves a nice little podcast. Although, you know, you're out there and you're still with us, so thanks for hanging around. I appreciate your tolerance and your patience. You know the number, 304-658-3333. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Just want to make sure that I'm logged into Skype. Yep, we're logged in, so if you want to jump in that way, that's just fine. By the way, thanks to Ed for getting us started this evening. I really appreciate that of the Ed stepping out there and taking care of a chunk of the $150 we try to raise every evening. Although I feel kind of funny mentioning fundraising, even though I'm sitting here and can barely get a stream out. The buffering seems to have settled down for the time. Oh, there it is. No, there it is. Oh, it's back. Charming. Oh, well. We'll do the best we can. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I would say what's up, Tiger Lily, but I think I know what's up.
You've got
a lot of problems there.
I expect to have technical difficulties from time to time. It's part of the business.
Well,
but, Jim, this is just infuriating.
Well, I think you're carrying too much weight on that computer you have there.
No. This is the simple inability of the people to whom we pay for bandwidth to provide the bandwidth that they are contractually obligated to provide.
Okay. I know the computers are wonderful things as they crown, so they crucify.
No, the computer that runs the stream, probably too much inside baseball, but the only thing that computer is doing is sending out the stream. That's it.
Okay, that's the one you're going to rebuild or have rebuilt? Or
no, this is the one I put in line yesterday in order to get when the other one died. So this is the backup computer. Yeah, it's a quad core processor with eight gigs of RAM. It's huge. It should be able to. Yeah.
I just wonder how long you've been using that system that you have there.
It gets rebuilt periodically.
Okay. Well. I wish you well with it. I mean, I don't know if you do it yourself or have a technician do it, but I mean, like I say, these things can fail.
Well, one of them did yesterday, and this is a spanking. All it's ever done is sit there waiting to be used in the case of an emergency.
Oh, so you're on backup now?
Yeah, the streaming computer is a backup machine.
Okay. Well, that's quite a tour about guns and stuff like that throughout the whole country.
Yeah, and that was just a couple of days' worth. That's the thing. That's not something that happened last year. These are things that have happened in the last 3 or 4 days.
Well, God. Well, to JoJo from Kokomo, I think a vasectomy would be a lot less painful.
One never knows what kind of health care one's going to get inside the stir. Because, you know, he did get caught.
No, hell no. My God in heaven. I mean, Lord, it's like Dodge City all over again.
Well, this whole country is, Jim.
Oh, I remember.
And that's, you know, that's why I asked that question. What level of paranoia has to attend the lives of these people who wind up in these stories? After you get past the sympathy, you have to ask questions that actually relate to understanding the problem. And it is a problem, no matter how many times these right-wing horses rear in swear that it's not. We've got a problem in this country.
Oh, yeah, of course we do. But, you know, I mean, Michael Moore suggesting publishing photographs or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, hell.
No, he's not suggesting publishing them. He's saying if they ever come out, it's the end of the NRA.
I don't think so. I disagree. Bob, if the films of the concentration camps that they went into after World War II isn't enough to teach you about human cruelty and stupidity, and nothing will.
Well, Eisenhower marched the local citizens through some of those camps. And the one thing you can say with some certainty is it did have an effect there. I don't think anyone has dealt with the horrors of the Holocaust better or more appropriately than has Germany. They acknowledge it, they teach it, and they say, and it's part of why they say we'll never let that happen to us again.
Well, I'm not worried about Germany.
Right. So the point is, what Eisenhower did, they learned from.
It seems to be springing up all over different parts of the globe. That's my point exactly.
Right. Well, this nation has never had that come to Jesus moment, if we can call it that. We've never addressed or dealt with, for instance, you know, fully and completely the issue of slavery, the issue of native genocide.
Well, that was the next point I was going to make. And the photographs of what was done to the Indians and what was done to, oh God, so many other peoples, and even the pictures that Brady took after the Civil War, or during the Civil War, as you pointed out earlier, brought it really home to what war was really like. I don't know, I had this crawling suspicion that from generation to generation, people have a way of just forgetting and just say, oh, well, that's in the pages of a book.
Well, I think you can certainly make that argument rather compellingly with the American people, Jim. But again...
Well, I think you do it with a lot of other people, too.
But, I mean, that is our...
I mean, we are not the sole proprietor of that, in my opinion.
No, by no means. But the fact of the matter is, like I said, we have never even tried to deal in an adult fashion with any of the horrors for which we are responsible.
Well, I think we have to a certain extent. I mean, there have been numerous documentaries and things of that nature in which they have photographed. And Ken Burns, for example, and some of his programs, and beautifully done pictorials of the horrors of these things.
But that, you know, that was PBS, and there's a certain segment of this population that watches PBS, and the rest don't. I think about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of South Africa, for instance. That touched every single individual in that country. What minuscule portion of the American population has been touched by Ken Burns? Or, for that matter, any given documentary?
Well, I don't know. I watched them religiously.
And Jim, I think we can all agree and all understand that you are not, and this is praise, not condemnation. You are not emblematic or representative of the ordinary mass of this country.
Well, I guess you're right there.
You are erudite. You are well spoken. You are well educated. Those two hours of Dr. Bill this afternoon kind of point out in glaring relief that we have largely failed in creating that in the vast majority of this country.
Yeah, that's a good program, and you should continue it.
Well, we plan to.
I don't listen to all of it because a lot of it I already know because of, you know, prior education and stuff like that, but it just simply reinforces and reminds me of things that I've sort of like allowed to escape into the canyons of the dustbin of my mind, if you want to call it that. So it never hurts to have a good reminder and stuff like that. But I mean, you know, what percentage of the population hears him? And that's
right.
That's a rhetorical question.
It's a larger population than would if we weren't doing this. So that's a positive step forward.
Oh yeah.
But the point is, there has to be a national will toward dealing with some of these things. For instance, if you bring up the issue of slavery, there's a huge segment of this population saying, "Well, I don't know no slaves. It ain't my fault." And that's the end of it for them. They don't understand how the whole institution touched and corrupted virtually everything we have in this country today. You know, I think back to the story of the trip south that William Henry Seward took long before he became Secretary of State or ran for president in the 1850s, maybe the 1840s. And he was going to visit friends, I think, in South Carolina.
Naturally.
Because, you know, members of the Senate were genial and collegial like that. And he got part of the way into Virginia and saw the abysmal horrors of slavery. And he had been more or less of an anti-slavery guy to begin with, but he couldn't even make it all the way to the southern state line of Virginia. He could not make it. He turned around and came back because it was so sickening, so horrible to see what was going on in a part of the nation that was supposed to be the same country he was living in. And he went back to Auburn, New York, and never went south no more.
Well, Seward wasn't he an abolitionist in the first place?
He wasn't a full on fire eater.
No, but I think he was.
That's what I said. He was anti-slavery, but when he came back, he was a sure enough abolitionist.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, you're torn between two versions of that as maybe a South Carolinian, you know, and I'm just putting myself out on the line here, but I was taught that it wasn't that bad. The attitude of the owners toward their property or chattels were very paternalistic, and well, a good slave cost about $4,000 back then. Why are you going to abuse somebody like that who's invested so much money? Now, I'm not, you know, that's just what I was exposed to.
Yeah, and that is largely the same account that's given all over the South. It's like that passage I read. What was it? Monday night, from the Bob Jones University homeschool textbook, said, you know, slavery wasn't so bad after all. Oddly enough, those assertions tend to be made by people who were not slaves.
Bob Jones is a piece of work. You ever been there?
No, I've not been near that place. I'm afraid of snakes.
They have an incredible art collection and stuff like that. They really do. But it's the only campus that I've ever seen that have campus security that are armed with AR-15s.
Yeah, and they forbid the holding of hands and interracial relationships.
Oh, well, all kinds of stuff, you know.
But they produce a series of textbooks that are specifically designed for homeschool use and are now used in taxpayer-supported schools in Louisiana.
Hmm. Well, that's not very good news here that the state of Louisiana would use their money to buy something like that. But I guess that's the mindset of the people there.
Oh, that's Bobby Jindal's doing.
Well, Bobby Jindal is, that's right, he is the governor of Louisiana, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, well, he's one of the, isn't he one of the luminaries that's going to be speaking tomorrow or having spoken at CPAC 2.0?
I wouldn't be surprised. That it's a, well, if you ran in there with a butterfly net and just started running around the room, you'd come with a full catch.
Yeah, they're going to have quite a.
Yeah, this is the same outfit that invited Sarah, and the Conservative Political Action Committee, they invited Sarah Palin to come and speak, they invited Donald Trump to come and speak, but the one guy who had a viable chance at being able to talk to the rest of America, Chris Christie, of whom I am no fan.
No invite.
No invite.
I know. They were going on about that tonight on Al Sharpton. Good Lord in heaven. And even on Chris Matthews earlier. And how these people are just going to get up there. And then, of course, you had the Donald. He was up there going on about.
Well, yeah, we have to, yeah, but the Donald and the thing on his head. Don't forget the thing on his head.
Oh, I prefer not to remember it, really. You don't mind. God almighty. I've seen coxcombs that look better than that. But nonetheless, but, you know, I don't know why they are so stupid that they continue to have all these failed people there. I mean, you've got Trump, who he may have been able to amass $3 billion and put canyons in Manhattan. And then you've got Sarah Palin, who could even last one term as the governor of her own state and then got into all that other crap that she got into. She was a laughingstock. And then you've got, I can't even remember, you know, the entire litany of the people who are going to be addressing that thing. And, of course, their object is, one of their objects is to appeal Obamacare or the Affordable Health Care Act. And
well, of course, and one of the folks that was mounting the stage there was that darling of a certain segment of the progressive movement, Rand Paul.
Yeah, he's going to be there. And I don't even think they're holding it inside the Beltway. I think it's like on the coast of Maryland, isn't it?
No. I thought it's in D.C., isn't it?
Mm-mm.
Not this year?
It's in Maryland.
It's usually a downtown, one of those downtown D.C. events. Maybe they couldn't afford it this time through.
Well, maybe they decided they'd be safer being there because, I don't know. But I think that's where they said they were going to hold this thing. But I just looked at the list of the people who are going to be speaking on this thing and the subjects they're going to be speaking on. And the opening comments by that gentleman, that black guy who used to be in the House of Representatives. What's his name? Oh, he's a real...
Oh, Alan West, yeah. Peace. What was his pull quote from today? Peace comes from the Marine Corps, not the Peace Corps.
Oh, that was just one of the many phrases he uttered. He was just a real gem. And I thought to myself, my God in heaven. And yet you have a public forum in which to speak and all the putrid stuff that's coming out of your mouth. And God only knows who else is going to be speaking there. Is old 80 Munster going to be there?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You mean the zombie-eyed Granny Starver?
Yeah. That's just real, real sad. But indicative of the power these people still hold and the lengths to which they will go to overcome the results of last November. They just can't stand it. And I don't think the president's forages or visits to the capital have produced a whole lot of good. I don't know if you think so, but I don't think so. I don't think he's done any good. To tell you the truth.
No. I mean, and the Republicans he talked to telegraphed that right off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we had a genial meeting and everything. I mean, we didn't spit on his shoes or anything, but, oh, God, and, you know, it's not like we're going to get all sane all of a sudden. We're nuts.
I know. I think it probably it'll be even more effective if Joan Rivers would go up there and talk to him.
Well, or have about the same summary effect at the very least.
By the way, I have her book in front of me. It's called Joan Rivers, I Hate Everyone, Starting With Me. And it is a read.
Oh, I can imagine it is.
Good Lord in heaven. That woman, she never ceases to amaze me. She never does. But, I mean, I just don't think that they're going to break the gridlock in D.C., and I think they're what they're trying to do, I think I said before, they're basically holding the president to the 20th. If we can't have it our way, we'll just shut the whole damn thing down. And the thing that they were bringing up the most instead of their own, you know, efforts to solve a problem, which pisses them the most off, is that the White House is closed.
Yeah.
To the public.
Well, if they didn't want and the simple answer to that, Jim, is if they didn't want the White House to be closed, they should have come to some sort of an agreement. But the Republicans chose not to do so. You know, again, and I know you know it, and we've talked about it in the past, can we please recall the fact that the president does not have the authority to pass a budget?
No, not even the $74,000 a week that it takes to keep the place open. You know, for the American populace, it's the people's home, people's house. They have a right to see it, and that's really bad that had to happen. Whatever happened to the guy who offered to fund it for a week? Did he all of a sudden just grow silent?
I don't think anything came of that. I don't even know if it would be legal to do.
No, there's no way they could. No, there's no way they could do that because, I mean, those people are federal employees.
Yeah.
I don't know. But those are my few comments for the evening. I don't have anything else to say other than it's just really a mess. They're going to be putting out up there in Maryland tomorrow, or maybe I am mistaken. Maybe it is D.C., but I think it is in Maryland somewhere. I can't remember the name of the city. I used to live in Maryland, so I said that. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, just something before you go that I wanted to bring up when you the historical revisionism, there's some of that on display at CPAC as well. Have you heard about these remarks from among the nuttiest of the nutty, Louis Gohmert?
No, enthrall me with your acumen.
Well, it ain't acumen, and I don't know how enthralling it is, Jim. But he declared today that, really, in 2013, he's going back over this ground, Vietnam was winnable, but people in Washington decided we would not win it.
Mm-hmm.
This was during part of a panel called Too Many Wars, Should We Wear, and Can We Afford?
What were his other talking points? Do you know?
No, that was the one that sent everybody running out of the room. Vietnam was winnable.
Well,
I mean, he's a disgrace, obviously. But it's such an insult to people who served and died there. Because there's kind of like climate change, Jim. There is no realistic debate on whether Vietnam was right or wrong. Just like there's no legitimate debate on whether or not climate change is real. You've got fringe people in both instances out there. I guess Louis wishes we were still there. When, Jim, when does he figure we were going to win that?
Mm, obviously he doesn't know a whole lot about, he hasn't read Stanley Carnot's book about the Vietnam War. And of course,
I don't think he's read anything much, much more complicated than the coloring book at McDonald Land.
That's a good book. K-R-N-O-W. The Vietnam War. I think that's, but you can pull it by his last name. And, the things that happened there and why that war was fought. And, you know, it was started under false pretenses with the Gulf of Tonkin in August of 63? August of 63?
The Gulf of Tonkin, I think.
I think it was thereabouts. Yep. Absolutely. And then, of course, you know, one thing led to another, an escalation, more troops, and, of course, being able to prosecute a war that was neither popular nor was it winnable. I mean, you know, it was kind of like the British trying to win over here. I mean, you can't just transport troops 14,000 miles away after they've been drafted, expect them to get out in those jungles and fight over acres of land over which these people have been living for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years. I mean, it's just, it was condemned by by its own beginning. And of course it was prosecuted by Dow Chemical, Colt Firearms.
Yep. Better living through chemistry.
Well, better living through technology and gun stuff. And of course,
don't forget what became, well, Brown and Root.
Brown Root.
Brown and Root. They became Kellogg Brown and Root, but back during Vietnam, they were referred to as Burn and Loot for what they got in the way of the Pentagon monies.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it gave the Pentagon something to do, and of course, they were all upset about Laos and all this kind of stuff, and then the domino theory started, and I'm not trying to bring all that stuff back up, but I mean, there are still people who believe today that it was winnable and sustainable, but you simply can't prosecute wars of that type of magnitude logistically or morally or ethically. You simply can't do it. It is a lost cause from the very beginning. I have this beautiful country. That's a beautiful country over there. If you ever have a chance to go.
But you know, it's a beautiful country, but not one you'd want to fight a war in.
Oh, no.
At least according to MacArthur.
No. Like I say, it's a beautiful country, and the mountains are wonderful, and the Montagnards who live there are an extremely interesting group of people. But back then in those days, it probably still is now, who knows. But the way they had that place honeycombed and fought an insurgency, it was a lesson for all to be learned for all time. But we hadn't learned that yet either. Now we're over there, got over there in Iraq, and, well, not to go on about that. There are other people who've got more important things to say than I do, but I just thought I would ask you about CPAC 2.0. That's just going to be a real barn burner, I'm sure.
Oh, it already has been. We've got some constitutional fun with Marco Rubio to go through here that just that can't be beat, Jim.
Now, he's a pretty slick guy.
I don't think slick's the word I'd use, Jim, considering, you know, that whole grabbing for the water bottle. He's a pretty dry guy.
Well, yeah, he did. I just wonder why he did that, because he was just like minutes away from terminating his.
I don't know. Watching that was like an 80s flashback. I hadn't seen anybody. He was doing everything but chewing the air gum. He looked like he'd done about four lines of coke before he came on. And
but you know, he turned that around, and that hadn't hurt him.
Fundraised on it, and
yeah, exactly. So you know, He's a guy. I want to bid you good night.
All right. Have a good night, Jim.
You too.
Bye now. Appreciate you lifting my spirits, Jim. Because the technical gremlins really do kind of get me down a little bit from time to time. Philip writes in, "Relax, Bob. I know it's not you. I live 10 miles down the road from the National Security Agency's headquarters, and various spying devices and radar, and I just figure the clicking on my telephone over the past few years and the latest problems with the horn are efforts to suppress my few joys in communication because I'm a progressive. Here, within a stone's throw of the Capitol building, why should reactionaries and conservatives have a monopoly on paranoia? If I want to think it's the NSC rather than the horn's computer, so be it. Opinions, not facts, matter. Just don't shoot the damn computer until I've persuaded myself that it isn't unwarranted government intrusion on a retired government employee's liberties. By the way, Philip says, I have to agree with Jim. Seen so much violence in movies and television in my lifetime that even separate seems surreal. I react more viscerally when I read and can think about what I'm reading. Even on PBS, which I routinely watch, English murder mysteries abound and after a while have a numbing effect on one's ability to discern reality from the manufictional asides for people's home-viewing pleasure. Let that, just let that sink in for a minute. That phrase, the manufactured fictional homicides for people's home-viewing pleasure. Seeing the photos of the Columbine, Newtown, Sikh, and other victims when they were alive and smiling and realizing the great loss of such vivid lives affect me more than the photos of carnage. How many times did we see the planes hit and people jump on cable news? After the first day's coverage, the repetition satisfied the need for sensationalism, and the falling people became black specks. I know others will disagree. However, having gone without television and movies for a year and a half recently, I began to react to reality on the Lehrer Report again, and it's not pleasant. I suspect that the purpose of the repetition is to immunize us to the violence that surrounds us and wars fought allegedly on our behalf. As far as computers, the NSC bubble. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, this is the fellow with the concepts again. I really want
Steve. Is it?
My name is Jeff, and I'm out right now. I'm in Florida, and I'll be headed back north as soon as the weather calms down. I can't take the cold anymore. But I look at this, the way the system is running, and I listen to most of these reports, and I agree with everybody what they're saying. But tears sort of come to my eyes when I see the fact that when I worked 25, 30 years ago, I worked 40 hours a week as a blue-collar worker, and I supported a family of four. And if I wanted a little extra, I worked some overtime. And that was before Reagan. And then I put my kids through school, and I lived a comfortable life. Now we have a tremendous amount of more than 80 hours a week, but no one understands the reasons for this, and no one's going back to finding out what the problems are. And once you figure out, you can see the actual problem, but you can't see the effect. And people have to start looking back far enough without complaining. Here's what happened. Here's the cause, and how can it pay? Does that send you
official
people back in a thousand years ago? But Reagan Wright, on one day he said, he worked, but it only becomes a day, or $1 million a year, or whatever, and it doesn't matter what the number is. You pay 95% back to the system, so the guy who swept your floor can put his kid through school. It worked because you had a real communication system. Changed the wars we're talking about. What actually made it so we can't talk anymore is the media's been taken over. We know this. The question is, there's some basic, simple things that can be taken, that we can do things about, that we can take this back. And it doesn't take 50% of the world population. It takes probably 1% of the population to do something about it. The rest of the people, if they realize that when someone spits in your face and they tell you it's raining, they know that spitting in your face is not, it's raining. We just in your face mean. They're told that. You got to believe that. I can see behind you, but you come nice and calm. We have to be able to look to see the problem and then come with the complicated answer. The answer is, because the vote is a shell game. The answers in the system is going to collapse. There's going to be nothing in store horror. But we can set its collapse. We know. I think there's always a great piece. Money pieces. Most people comes from. they don't know who we're in debt to. They are with China. Well, China buys our bonds. They do not loan us money. If we go belly up, they're going to go bankrupt on, with their bonds. It has nothing to do with it. And we talk about the role we're borrowing money.
No, you're not just. I think you're. You're getting at something that's underneath the surface that is hard to get one's head around.
Well, we just have to realize that we've been fed bullshit the last 20 years. No human being is worth 100 or 1,000 times another human being because when I'm not against the way. If I want to bust my chops and work harder, but I'm not busting my chops and working harder with an old-fashioned, you know, rock chisel. I'm working harder with an electric screwdriver. I'm working harder with the best technology that humanity has come up with. And it's not money can buy. It's what humanity has came up with on the backs of human beings' labor and intellect.
And that's the problem. We have people in this country. And they tend to be the people who have money. And we have had them in this country, for instance, the way that Dr. Bill was talking earlier this afternoon, from the very origins, who do not value human beings equally.
Ah, there's the rub.
They value wealth.
That's the thing is they're valuing the look. The only thing that matters, and this is, I looked a little bit into economics. I'm not an economist, but I've looked at all these so-called great economists, and one of them, I just went blank on his name, but he was saying that a currency has to have a value that every human being in the world has access to that can be sold. Now, the reason why gold and silver was such a great commodity, and that's why people worship gold and silver and also nowadays dollars, is because it used to have a specific weight and by the gram and value. But the reality is all that gold and that paper and the paper transfer of things before were for human intellect and labor, and if people realize that they are worth for simply 20 hours of work, you want to fix the unemployment problem, just put in a 30-hour work week or a 20-hour work week.
Well, but back up for just a minute, please.
Go ahead.
There, you talk about precious metals, and the problem with that is it was not as stable as people thought it was. For instance, all one need do is wander through the chapter about Spain and Mexican and Central American and South American silver, and you find out right away that it was anything but stable. The vast wealth that Spain tapped in the Americas in the way of silver led to its own undoing because the market was flooded with Spanish silver, whose worth, by virtue of lack of scarcity, went down considerably. So
let's back up and say that you're right, that is not even debatable. With silver, gold, anything that we trade as a commodity, it's traded basically for our goods and services and our intellect. That's what we're trading for. You know, whatever you can figure out, if you need if I need to talk to you on the radio and you have a radio program, I mean, it's funny to hear you ask to raise $150, whatever, where you listen to someone like NPR who's drawing salaries down $500,000 a head. You know, it's shocking. I mean, not giving you any information. You put out more information in your show than they put out all week. But anyway, I don't mean to type there. I'm going off on a tangent. But what I'm saying is that the problem is not as complicated as we all think it is. It's only complicated because we're allowing it to become complicated. What if anything is worth any human being in the world, no matter where you are, who you are, you're worth you're a little bit of labor because of the natural resources. You should be entitled to, number one, primarily education for you and your child, no matter what. That gives you, of course, more doctors and more engineers. And then you have basic food and shelter. Now, if you decide you want something that's really worth, like a gold plate, I use the word gold plate, toilet bowl seat a lot, but if you think you need that, you can work harder. But no human being is worth 1,000 or 1,000,000 times another human being only in this economic system.
Yeah, well, and you're getting at the essential nut of the problem. And that is, and it's something that Marx went on about, and in many, rightly so, I think. It's even in Adam Smith, whose works, whose Wealth of Nations is a lesser work in the overall oeuvre of his life's writing. But you're talking about the fundamental unfairness of the accumulation of wealth.
But how fair? Look, the Occupy movement is right. They're out there, and it's a huge movement, and they're saying it's worldwide. It's unfair. But again, without some kind of a measurement, I'm not trying to push anything at this point. Adam Smith and Marx said, yeah, labor's worth something. And Adam Smith said that also. But Marx never had a measurement for it. So you couldn't see how unfair it is. If I told you it's 150 degrees right now in Florida, you would know damn well I'm lying or I'm crazy or both. Because you know that it couldn't be 150 degrees in Florida. We'd melt. So without a measurement, if I go to the hospital, first thing they want to do is check my blood pressure. You take my temperature to see to give a baseline of what's the matter so they can fix it. If my car's not running, I can bitch and moan and say, my car isn't working properly, but until I open the hood, at least take a look at what's wrong with it. I can't fix it. But Marx had a good, he was going in the right direction. Adam Smith did great stuff, except in one, he went on and on and on about everything. I almost bought into it. But in one paragraph, in one sentence, he says, well, money is like gold, and gold can't perish, so therefore money buys human labor. He didn't say it like that. I can't quote it just right off the top of my head. But I know where you're going with that. But throughout history, We've always tried to take advantage of another human being, even though we know intuitively that if you kick me in the shin, it's going to hurt. You don't want me to kick you back in the shin. So intuitively, we're not bad people. We know that we don't want to hurt one another. So we must come up with some kind of a way to say all human beings, and I don't mean to be religious on this, and I'm not, are created equal. Some people are going to work harder, and they're worth more, but no human being.
That's one of the fundamental problems with the inquiry, and that is, we can talk Marx, we can talk Adam Smith, hell, we can talk Milton Friedman. Yuck. If I ever get near that man's grave, I'm going to drink about 3 quarts of beer and piss all over it. I think, I think the level of inquiry that you're talking about is something that's more down around the hierarchy of needs stuff. And if you talk about the essentials for human life as opposed to the essentials of human desire, then you're into an entirely different realm of inquiry. You know, there's that old saying about living simply so that others may simply live.
But the point I'm making at is that the technology now is worldwide, and it's pervasive. It's just that it's not distributed properly. They have a project out here in Florida called the Venus Project. It's also been highlighted, I think, in Zeitgeist moving forward. And he makes a great point. Unfortunately, it's some place that I don't think we can get to from where we are now. We have to go in increments to it. But the zeitgeist moving forward is something every listener out there, if they haven't seen it yet, should see it. And so they'll know what a resource-based economy is. That's what the Venus Project's about. And if they don't understand Mrs. or Marx theory, they should educate themselves to a certain point. So at least when we talk, have a conversation like this, they know what we're talking about.
The Horn family are a bunch of sharp cookies. So I don't think you need to have any fear along those lines.
How do we get out of the Horn family and get beyond? See, I try to talk on like a business talk radio in most cases to tell them how profitable renewable energy is for their community, and I try to get into that. If I'm not religious, but I'll go into a pastor and give him my spiel about no human being is worth more. Don't you think that? And they say yes. And of course, we say, well, now how much do we think? Don't we need to do something about this? And of course, they all agree with it. I talk to them on a humanitarian basis, not on a Democrat, Republican.
And there's all kinds of so-called holy wisdom out there. It's to be had, well, in just about every scriptural book. And it starts with don't do hateful things to other people that you would hate to have done to you.
You're right, baby. I agree.
There are essentials that go with being human beings in so-called sedentary or settled or civilizational society. I wish to goodness I had Dr. John here. He's much better at this than I. But it's.
Okay.
I'm struggling here. What you have to. I mean, if you're really, really serious about raising the standard of living of every human being on the planet, you have to consider the planet's ability to support human life.
Okay.
As far as the technology is, it feels global to those of us who are plugged in, but it isn't. You know, the internet is not ubiquitous for the 2 billion people on this planet who cannot drink water safely.
Well, the 6 billion people and the 8 billion or 9 billion is going to come about. I'm not disagreeing with you, but the first step I talk about is the first thing we have to do is education. Education takes that into account.
Yeah, so consider the fact that in his address today at the CPAC convention, darling of the stranger quarter of the progressive movement, Rand Paul, declared that he will balance the federal budget in 5 years, and that the first thing he's going to do, because this has been one of those bones that the libertarians and the John Birchers and so forth have been chewing on for decades, first thing he's going to do is he's going to destroy the United States Department of Education.
He's not the only one who said that.
No. That, like I said, that's a bone that those weirdos have been chewing on for a generation or more.
Well, look, I can't dwell on what that. I hear all the rhetoric. I hear all the words. I can't change their thinking process, man. I don't even want to.
What I'm getting at is that at some point in time, I don't know. I want more money for space exploration because I want to run them off the planet.
Well, my wife says we should send George, if he wants to see Mars so much, we should just ship him out. But that was when he was president. Anyway, we can play all. I just want to figure out a way. And I'm not trying to be facetious or
No, and sadly, the realization that I think we dance around in all of this because nobody wants to talk about it because it's so almost unutterably brutal is that the damn thing has to fall apart.
Oh, no, I have no doubt about it's going to fall. I mean, this is a question of how soon. That's the only
internal within the scope of what you're talking about is the question of whether or not we can soften the landing.
Well, no, what I'm suggesting is if we don't have some kind of a plan or a tool, a simple tool like you know, all of a sudden we invented a hammer. I mean, that was a wheel. Well, these are pretty simple tools. If we have the simple tool, so when the system falls apart, we can put the tool in place, and then we can say, it fell apart, but here's what we can do. So when we bring it up to a quality of, life, the economics mean shit. But the quality of life is what we're talking about. I mean, I've been to Cuba, they're poor in Cuba, and of course they have a dictator there who doesn't let them talk. We spoke like we do.
Yeah, but to consider, you know, you cannot measure. I mean, I think I know where you're about to go with reference to Cuba. Let's remember that a woman has a better chance of surviving childbirth in Cuba than she does in the United States of America.
You got it. Right.
Okay. A newborn has a better chance of living in Cuba than it does in the United States of America. Meanwhile, what was it? A couple of years ago, the happiest place on earth was found to be Denmark. And I don't say that to demean Danes, but it's why? It's not because they're making more money. It's because they're not. It's not because they've got more stuff. Because they don't. It is because they have a working community-based culture, and they have a governmental structure that is responsive to their needs.
But if you say that to the average American person in this society today, they want to stone you. You're crazy.
Why do you hate America?
I mean, it is amazing. And if you ask somebody,
if you like Denmark so much, why don't you go there? Well, if I could afford the plane fare.
I mean, well, actually, the problem is we are in a one world game here, and I no matter how much I hope we're not and believe we're not, I just one of my conspiratorial friends says to me, we need to be individualists. So he's always, I said, well, I'm suggesting we'll all be individualists, but you have to have a quality of life as well, and you need the government to sort of. We are the government, so we are the ones who, and when someone says the government is shitty, I say, you want to blame someone, man, just look in the mirror. Because you guys aren't doing anything to try to fix it. Look in the mirror. Look where the problems are. Look where what we may be able to fix. Come up with some ideas to fix it. Stop blaming everybody. Does that make, I'm going off on a tangent. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. These are not tangents. These are conversations, which you will find out over the course of time. You know, we are not married to lineality. Our conversations go all over the place, and that's what makes it a bit different.
But I use the hardware store. I'll be talking to someone about the quality of life, you know, and I purposely don't. I don't live in a part of Florida when I choose to live here in Naples or the West Palm Beach or. I'm not fond of those areas. I live in a very, I call it poor haven, poor area in Florida. I live here because the human beings here are very interesting. They're not homogenized. And a lot of them aren't educated, but they're very smart. And if you talk to them about something like this, you know, you're right. Now, of course, they don't like Obama and they don't like the government because they watch a little bit of Fox News.
Or a lot.
But when you start to talk to them down on an individual basis, they're right there.
See, I don't even know if I can do that anymore. I mean, I talk to my neighbors and I get similar responses. I'll never forget the man who told me that NASA was just a government excuse to try to prove that God don't exist. I don't know how much I can do of that anymore. I mean, for instance, I ran across a fella last week who, as serious as the day is long, I mean, serious as a heart attack, told me that the real problem we face is not from the fact that the American military might fire on us, but because Obama's got the UN lined up and ready to come in the minute he gives the word.
You know, I have an aunt in I shouldn't use, well, in Boca Raton, Florida. I'm not going to use any names, so it's easy to, but she hates Obama. He's Fox News, and I don't know if you could.
Danny's Grand Slam, I just couldn't.
Well, I the older I get, I guess
I'd be face down in the egg yolk.
I'm sorry. I called. I want the very sorry.
I appreciate it. It is frustrating when I'm the master of it.
Well, I know that the way the system is, ever since the Vietnam War, the media has been just spoon-feeding bullshit to most of our society. And unfortunately, they're drinking the Kool-Aid. And most of these people will vote against their own interests and, when it does fall apart, I'm just hoping, I'm not hoping, I'm trying to work for it to see if we can get some kind of a situation in place so we can say, here's why it fell apart, here's what we can do about it, are we ready to do that? And hopefully we may be able to move fast enough. My fear is we can't move fast enough, and I'm running out of years. I've been talking about renewable energy since 1970. I retired about 1975, just, and I spent my whole life promoting renewables. And the reason for that is not so much I'm interested in the environment, which I am interested in, but the reason why I do this, it's economics, because you can't be economically and environmentally sound unless you're economically stable. That's a feeling I have about this. And
no, I think you just nailed that one to the wall.
So we need to move faster. And when I listened, I went to Gore's thing, the Inconvenient Truth, and what he said was with almost tears came to my eyes. I said that one. He said, you know, when I was senator or whatever, congressman, when I became vice president, I thought I was going to do all this. I thought I was going to do all that. He said, but you know, it works one person at a time. And when he said that, the chills went down my spine because it works.
One person at a time does work. Here's the problem. There's Fox News is out there, and they're talking to millions at a time.
Yeah, the thing is, but they know, the people listen to them, most of them will agree with Fox News blindly. But those blind people are going to play the game. But when this falls apart, Fox is gone. And the people that remember this conversation, maybe only 20 of them or 10 of them. And maybe 10 of them will tell 10 more of their friends out of the 50 who listen. We're building an Amway to try to fix the system. And the system, we know the system, I mean, unless I'm terribly wrong, this system's not going to stay the way it's going. It can't sustain itself. I don't know.
No, it can't. No, whether it's sea level rise, temperature rise, the hot graph, everything points to the fact that it can't. But if there's flaw to beings, And it just goes back to the way the stuff that I learned and the stuff that fascinates me. This planet is littered with the remains of civilizations that could not deal with things that they knew were happening to them. One of the earliest manifestations of civilization on this planet is in the Indus River Valley, and it's called Mohenjo-Daro. And the culture was the Harappan culture. And at one point in time, apparently living in the Indus River Valley was a really nice way to build the very first civilization on the planet. But then the river courses changed, or maybe it was flooding, or maybe it was the climate. I'm not sure what. I haven't kept up with my reading. And eventually, it becomes a ghost town. The whole culture, it's one of those things you don't hear about it as much, and I don't know if there's been a segment about on ancient aliens yet or not. Jesus.
I've heard that one many times.
But the thing is, within a couple of centuries, nobody could explain what that culture was, and in a couple of more centuries, it was buried in dust and sand and silt.
Yeah, it started.
Look at the Maya, the Maya people. The Maya people still are; they still quite exist. They're still speaking the same language that is carved into the stelae of places like Calakmul and Copan and Tikal. But they reached a point where they knew what they were. They literally cut down the entire jungle forest, the entire rainforest of the Yucatan Peninsula and the highlands. They cut every last damn tree down to burn it so that they could make lime with which to paint their pits white.
Yeah, I do. I know about it.
And the next thing you know, they're wandering off into the woods saying, well, work. The most one is that question that was by some famous anthropologist or ethnographer or whatever, who said, what was the guy thinking who chopped down the last tree on Rapa Nui?
Well, he said they'd grow back, but I'm only kidding. I'm kidding. I think that Harappan thing was back about 2500 BC, and it lasted about 2000 years, and they disintegrated. But anyway, we know it's going to collapse. We have the technology. I think I don't believe the aliens had better technology than they shipped us. I don't buy that theory that, you know, but I do think there is one thing I do believe, and I believe that the people who are running this country and this world now, not just the country, but this world, are psychopathic. And I believe that the bottom of my heart. They do not care how many people they kill for a piece of paper that makes them in the bank wealthier. And I think they're psychopathic. And that's the scary part to me. Because if they weren't psychopathic, they would not do the kind of crap they do. Just impossible. It's just impossible to torture and kill.
Well, and understand that work has been done, okay? We know the scientific work has been done. I read up on it a couple of months back. I'm very bad at hanging on to stuff that if I don't bookmark it right then and there, it's gone forever. But some researcher has looked into the personalities of the people at the tops of the corporate structure, the global corporate structure. And it doesn't matter if they're American or European or Asian, what have you. What is the existence of sociopathology and psychopathology within the upper levels of the global corporate management far outstrips the appearance of those same traits within the general population. In other words, psychopaths and sociopaths are running corporations because you have to have that kind of a twisted, conscienceless mind in order to work in the upper reaches of corporate America. Now, you know, if you're working for some, if you're or corporate world, if you're working as a, if you're a working stiff for some corporation, no, I am not saying you're a psychopath or a sociopath. But the people, you know, the blank finds, the diamonds, the people at the highest level of the financial system and the manufacturing system. You're probably not as familiar because you haven't been listening to the show as long. But is there anybody out there that thinks that Don Blankenship isn't a psychopath or a sociopath? Because I don't think they would be few and far between, except for the people who really like him and really care whether he is or not. And to them, he's a job creator and a business leader. but we're rife with them. The guy that runs Bank of America, the head man of Deutsche Bank. On and on and on. Guy who runs Alpha Natural Resource now, Kevin Critchfield. Yeah, I have a few. Sat him in a due relations.
Becomes a senator or a congressman or a president or whatever, they have to pass a test, you know, a psychopathic test. And they also should have to work in war in a fast food restaurant and live on that for a year so they know what it means. But anyway, we're all the same queue, but I really appreciate talking to you. You're a pleasure to deal with.
Well, thank you very kindly. Enjoy our conversation as well. You take care, all right?
Okay, bye now.
All right, bye now. It is a difficult question. When you're in the middle of a situation that seems unsolvable, just trying to find the first step toward a solution. Everything that you come up with for a solution. Oh wait, but that's going to cause that. I'm just curious. I want to see if I can find something here. This is a profile. These are the profile characteristics of a sociopath, according to the DSM-4. Glibness and superficial charm. Well, pick out, pick some titan of industry. Glibness and superficial charm. Trump. Manipulative and conning. They never recognize the rights of others and see their self-serving behaviors as permissible. They appear to be charming yet covertly and dominating, seeing as merely to you. They dominate their right. Pathological lying has no problem lying coolly and easily, and it is almost impossible for them to be truthful on a consistent basis. This sounds like a job description. Lack of remorse, shame, or guilt? Please. Goldman Sachs, remorse, shame, guilt? Bonus! Shallow emotions. Incapacity for love, need for stimulation. Living on the edge, verbal outbursts and physical punishments are normal. I remember the story of the woman who had to sue for her unemployment because she was sent to McDonald's to get breakfast for Don Blankenship, and she got some element of the order wrong. And when he saw it, he threw the food at her. Callousness, lack of empathy, poor behavioral controls, impulsive nature. Early behavior problems, juvenile delinquency. But see, those don't necessarily manifest in the class of our betters, because all gets shoved to the rug. He's precocious. Irresponsibility, unreliability, promiscuous sexual behavior, infidelity, lack of realistic life plan, parasitic lifestyle. I don't know. Is there much more of a parasitic lifestyle than, say, being the CEO of TransCanada? Criminal or entrepreneurial versatility. Changes their image as needed to avoid prosecution. Changes life story readily. Contemptuous of those who seek to understand them. Does not perceive that anything is wrong with them. Authoritarian, secretive, paranoid. Only rarely in difficulty with the law, but seeks out situations where their tyrannical behavior will be tolerated, condoned, or admired. You know, like on Wall Street. Conventional appearance. Mighty nice suit there. Goal of enslavement of their victim. That's job creating. Ultimate goal is the creation of a willing victim. Think all the hundreds of thousands of people who tune into Fox every day. Unable to feel remorse or guilt. Extreme narcissism and grandiose. We're back to Trump again. May state readily that their goal is to rule the world. Yeah, okay. Email just came in a little bit ago. Thanks, Henry. Thank you very kindly. We are now... about $125 from our, no, $115 from our fundraising goal for tonight. Philip wrote in a little bit ago regarding what I said about Louis Gohmert and his, Vietnam was winnable, but Washington decided they didn't want to win it. Hey. Vietnam and Louis, the NSC and the Horn. Philip says, when I was a 14-year-old, I lost a 20-year-old cousin in Vietnam during Nixon's first year of implementing the non-existent peace plan. My cousin was hit by a mortar and he came home half plastic so the family could have a sealed open casket sealed so he wouldn't melt in the July heat in a New England funeral home without air conditioning. If Louis wants to refight the Vietnam War or finish Afghanistan properly, by all means, I encourage him to do so. I just hope he takes all the other armchair warriors with him. However, let me not disparage Louis's honor. He served valiantly in combat in the JAG Corps and should have won the Purple Heart for being hit and viciously by a defense motion. I salute him for his bravery, as I do John McCain, who sadly is still a prisoner of the Vietnam War. By the way, I'm writing in silence immediately after you read the first paragraph of my first email. The horn sputtered, crackled, and died seconds later. I told you it was the NSC, and now they're retaliating. I won't be using the phone tonight, says Philip. Yeah, stay away from the phone. Feels that way sometimes. Really does. It is, it's about 21 minutes before the hour. A little bit of time left for conversation in the evening, if you so desire. Based on the previous conversation, though, granted, this is video, but the video is still filling, if I call correctly. Dr. Brother sent this to him, Dr. Bill had sent it on to me. It's a video sent called Well in America, but... Well, hopefully this will run. Well, that's it. We'll get to it in a second. At least I hope. Here we go.
Business professor.
Need to back it up so we get all the audio.
There's a chart I saw recently that I can't get out of my head. A Harvard business professor and economist asked more than 5,000 Americans how they thought wealth was distributed in the instance. This is what it was, dividing the country into bottoms. Then he asked them what they thought was the ideal distribution. And 92%, that's at least 9 out of 10 of them, said it should be more like this. In other words, more equitable than they think it is. Now that fact is telling, admittedly, the notion that most Americans know that the system is already skewed unfairly. But what's most interesting to me is the reality compared to our perception. The ideal is as far removed from our perception of reality as the actual distribution is from what we think exists in this country. So ignore the ideal for a moment. Here's what we think it is again. And here is the actual distribution. Shockingly skewed. Not only do the bottom 20% and the next 20%, the bottom 40% of Americans barely have any wealth. I mean, it's hard to even see them on the chart. But the top 1% has more of the country's wealth than 9 out of 10 of them give the entire top 11 million to just representative 100 people. Make it simple. Here they are. Teachers, coaches, firefighters, construction workers, engineers, doctors, lawyers, investment bankers, maybe a celebrity or two. Now let's line them up according to their wealth. Poorest people on the left, wealthiest on the right, just a steady row of folks based on their net worth. We'll color code them like we did before based on which 20% quintile they fall into. Now let's reduce the total wealth of the United States, which was roughly $54 trillion in 2009, to this symbolic pile of cash. And let's distribute it among our 100 Americans. Well, here's socialism, all the wealth of the country distributed equally. We all know that won't work. We need to encourage people to work and work hard to achieve that good old American dream and keep our country moving forward. So, here's that ideal we asked everyone about. Something like this curve. This isn't too bad. We've got some incentive, as the wealthiest folks are now about 10 to 20 times better off than the poorest Americans. But hey, even the poor folks aren't actually poor, since the poverty line has stayed almost entirely off the chart. We have a super healthy middle class with a smooth transition into wealth. And yes, Republicans and Democrats alike chose this curve. 9 out of 10 people, 92%, said this was a nice, ideal distribution of America's wealth. But let's move on. This is what people think America's wealth distribution actually looks like. Not as equitable, clearly, but for me, even this still looks pretty great. Yes, the poorest 20 to 30% are starting to suffer quite a lot compared to the ideal, And the middle classes search drug more than were, all the ring well you're making 100 out of the poorest Americans, and about 10 out of still healthy class. Sadly, this isn't even close to the reality. Here is the actual distribution of wealth in America. The poorest Americans don't even register. They're down to pocket change. And the middle class is barely distinguishable from the poor. In fact, even the rich between the top 10 and 20 percentile are worse off. Only the top 10% are off. And how much? So much better. The top 2 to 5% are actually off the chart at this scale. And the top 1%, this guy, well, his stack of money stretches 10 times higher than we can show. Here's his stack of cash, restacked, all by itself. This is the top 1% we've been hearing so much about. So much green in his pockets that I have to give him a whole new column of his own, because he won't fit on my chart. 1% of America has 40% of all the nation's wealth. The bottom 80%, 8 out of every 10 people, or 80 out of these 100, only has 7% between them. And this has only gotten worse in the last 20, 30 years. While the richest 1% take home almost a quarter of the national income today, in 1976, they took home only 9%, meaning their share of income has nearly tripled in the last 30 years. The top 1% own half the country's stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. The bottom 50% of Americans own only 0.5% of these investments, which means they aren't investing. They're just scraping by. I'm sure many of these wealthy people have worked very hard for their money. But do you really believe that the CEO is working 380 times harder than his average employee? Not his lowest paid employee, not the janitor, but the average earner in his company. The average worker needs to work more than a month to earn what the CEO makes in 1 hour. We certainly don't have to go all the way to socialism to find something that is fair for hardworking Americans. We don't even have to achieve what most of us consider might be ideal. All we need to do is wake up and realize that...
Even though that's added to the problems that we're having, my opinion. That, though, is that, you know, in 1976, the wealthiest 1% controlled 9% of the country's wealth. Even at that, in 1976... they still had mansions. Porsche and Mercedes-Benz and BMW and Rolls, Bentley were still selling cars. Probably more than they could manufacture, really. But that 9% wasn't good enough. They had to have it all. If you want to find that, just use your favorite search engine and look up, Wealth Inequality in America video. And then pass it around. Because I can't see where that would be easy to watch, even if you were in the top 10% of America. I can't imagine that would be easy to stomach, even if Fox News tells you every day that this is the greatest country on earth. I just can't. Wealth inequality in America. This evening has been so utterly technologically bizarre that it's really kind of hard to do just wrap all of this up. I don't exactly know how to do it, as a matter of fact. Lucky for me, there's only... Lucky for you, there's only about 12 minutes left in the program. Now, let me see here. Let me find a good 10-minute story. It's It's not like the buffering's going to stop anyway. Okay. Now, there were a couple of things. Well, I don't know. Maybe giving the given the tenor of these last few minutes of the program, maybe the best thing we could do would be to go to Alan Grayson. But because he said something. No, for heaven's sakes. No, we're not going to do that. Man, this is frustrating. Here we go. Sorry for the silence. Here it is. Alan Grayson over on current TV for as long as it continues on. Well, it's nice just to have a little honesty.
Agree. The nation needs a budget.
This is John Fugel saying, interviewing Alan Grayson.
Lash the safety net?
Absolutely. Look, let's start with the Affordable Care Act. He wants to eliminate the Affordable Care Act, repeal it, but he wants to count all of the savings, $100 billion in savings under the Affordable Care Act, down to, in order to say that he's paying down the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Medicare. His solution to the so-called Medicare problem is the MeLi solution. In order to save that program, he's going to destroy it. He's going to eliminate every single guaranteed benefit under Medicare, replace that with a check that everybody knows will not be enough to get the same benefits.
Exactly.
In one case after another, you look at his principles, you look at his vision, and they're a nightmare for America. He wants Americans to work until they die. He wants poor people who get sick not to be able to see a doctor, not to get the care they need, not to be able to get better. He wants them.
Let's back up for just a second, because Representative Grayson is talking about this in terms of Paul Ryan. Let's understand that what he's actually talking about is the entire Republican Party and the people who support it. Republican voters, Republican donors, Republican mayors, the entire Republican Party.
To save a single guaranteed benefit under Medicare, replace that with a check that everybody knows will not be enough.
Listen to this litany.
To get the same benefits.
Exactly.
In one case after another, you look at his principles, you look at his vision, and they're a nightmare for America. He wants Americans to work until they die. He wants poor people who get sick not to be able to see a doctor, not to get the care they need, not to be able to get better. He wants them to die. And he wants an America that consists of nothing but cheap labor for his corporate patrons.
And it's worth noting, Congressman, you mentioned the cuts in...
There it is. Platform schmatform. That's the Republican platform. He wants Americans to work until they die. He wants poor people who get sick not to be able to see a doctor, not to get the care they need, not to get better. He wants them to die, and he wants an America that consists of nothing but cheap labor for his corporate patrons. A long time ago, I read somewhere someone's argument that every conservative right-wing talking point boils down to cheap labor. And when you think of it in the ways that Alan Grayson just laid it out, it's hard not to agree. Is there a solution? If there is, I haven't found it. So instead, we will rely on the collective ability, our own collective abilities, to try to come to one. Because I don't think these big question things are ever going to be solved by one person. So thank you very much for your patience if you've stayed with it all the way through this evening. I wish I knew what was causing these bandwidth problems. The sad thing is, neither does the ISP. They sure do know how to send a bill, however. That part they've got nailed down. Assuming the crick don't rise, we'll be back tomorrow night for Friday on the Front Porch. Hope you all have a good evening. Again, thank you for your patience. Thank you to you all for your contributions that keep us going. We are in a bad way here as we approach the middle of the month. And all your help is deeply appreciated. Yeah, billing's easy. Bandwidth is hard. Thanks, Marty. Thank you for keeping all of this going as long as you have. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie, Sparky, Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Agnes for help with the posts. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. Go to ACAC.org. Won't cost you a dime. And you, by contacting your member of the House of Representatives, or even your senators, can have the satisfaction of knowing that you have done something that many others have not. You have stood up for the right of people in Appalachia, even unborn Appalachians, their right to be treated like an actual citizen of the United States. AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And Rick Smith is up next, and I'll bet his inner tubes work.